Welcome to the 10th episode of Pints of Football. It's truly a milestone episode for us. We will not be talking about any bobo moments from the week. We will not be talking about United losing. We will not be talking about any other thing. We'll be having really good subjects to talk about, which is the Real Madrid and Man City game.
I thought the serious topic was going to be for Chelsea's first victory in 10 games. A truly inspiring performance, don't you think?
No, this is for the Champions League. Chelsea no longer are in the Champions League this season and are not likely to be there in the next couple of seasons. So no Chelsea. We are going to speak about Real Madrid, Man City.
You didn't have to be mean in your rebuttal. You could have simply said no Chelsea this week. But the victory is getting me by, so I'll overlook that. But yes, Himanshu, cannot wait, absolutely cannot wait for this midweek, sleepless nights of football. And this is truly the business end of the season. And it really does not get any bigger than Real Madrid versus Manchester City when it comes to the style and let's say the hype. So how do you want to start this?
Let's first look at Real Madrid and Man City. Real Madrid on one side, who have won over serial Champions League winners. And then there's Man City, who have never won it in the history, but have spent a nation's ransom on Haaland and lots of other players to come in this season. And what seems like it's really achievable. But having these minor distractions of the Premier League and the FA Cup.
I'll ignore the nation's ransom part, considering United might be bought by another nation with blood money, being the people from Qatar. But yeah, let's go straight into this game and let's start by talking about Real Madrid. In general, I think when you talk about the Champions League, when you start analyzing or looking forward to the Champions League at the beginning of the season, no matter how weak or how strong this squad is, you simply cannot look past Real Madrid. And no matter what kind of form any other team is, this is the competition where they truly step up, right? When people say that phrase, these are the nights when the best players in the world bring their best form ever, that truly applies to Real Madrid in the Champions League. And again, this season, Himanshu, I mean, last season, again, every game they were almost knocked out, particularly against City. They were going out until the 90th minute, I believe, and then they scored 3 goals between the 90th and the 95th minute to knock them out. So they truly are the team of this tournament. And even this year, if you look at it, they have not played well domestically, but in the cup competition, which is the Copa del Rey, they were trailing in the first leg to Barcelona. They lost 1-0 at the Bernabeu. They went away to the Camp Nou and they won 4-0. Then they ended up winning the Copa del Rey just this past weekend 2-1. And again in the Champions League, they have been in imperious form. Yes, they had an easy group stage, but then they saw off Liverpool with such ease. And I know Liverpool not having a great season, but the ease and the control and the poise with which they went past Liverpool, and not to mention the absolute steamrolling of Chelsea. I think Madrid, again, irrespective of how the squad looks on paper or what we might say about an aging team, they've just always delivered the goods even this year in the Champions League, isn't it?
Exactly. You have to look at their league form in isolation from every other tournament. And I just find that very mind-boggling. Because, example, for a club like United, which I follow so closely, I know when they're doing badly in the league, they'll probably falter in the cup competitions as well. But not so for Real Madrid. It's like a completely different team turns up for the league and then for the knockout stages of any tournament.
And that's what makes analyzing them so tough, right? As you mentioned, it's almost like their league form is completely divorced from the way they play in the Champions League. And that just makes it so difficult to make sense. And if you look at them in the league in the past 10 or 11 games, I think they have probably won 6 out of the past 11 or 7 out of the past 11. But you really can't read into that, because the way the league works in Spain, if you're Real Madrid, if you're not winning it, then it really doesn't matter whether you finish second or third. For example, Atletico Madrid might overtake them now in the La Liga, but it really doesn't matter to Madrid anymore. So you're right. I mean, their league form just is of no use. And that's the peculiarity. And I think that's the beauty and the weirdness. And that's the romanticism, I think, which Real Madrid bring to the Champions League. Let's dive into this game and let's focus on, first of all, how do we think that Real Madrid are going to set up? We have a pretty good idea now of what their front three is going to be. I think both you and I agree it's going to be Benzema, Vinicius and Rodrigo. Rodrigo has turned out to be a starter in this Madrid team now for the past 10 to 12 games. He's been playing every game. Actually, in midfield is the area where we need to agree, right? Because that's the tricky area. Luka Modric is definitely going to start. I think you and I have no doubts about it. But who do you think he's going to start between Valverde, Tchouaméni and Toni Kroos? Who are the two?
It has to have Kroos. I think Kroos will be in the mix-up to some extent, especially at home. Then they'll have to, in my opinion, have the defensive midfielder, and which is, in this case, Tchouaméni. Camavinga will probably fit into defense, we'll come to a bit later on. But between Valverde and Tchouaméni, in my opinion, Tchouaméni is a better fit because he'll be, you know, he'll break up the passing between a Rodri and a Gundogan if they turn up.
I mean, I also agree with you on the part that Tchouaméni definitely is going to start. I think the way I look at it, Tchouaméni and Luka Modric will definitely start. The tricky choice for Ancelotti is going to be picking between Valverde and Toni Kroos. And they both obviously bring different things. Apart from the experience that Kroos brings to the table, I think with Modric and Kroos, you can exert that much control over a game. And I think that suited them beautifully against a team like Chelsea, where Ancelotti read the game right, that Chelsea will not have as much of the ball as compared to last year's Champions League quarterfinals. So a Kroos and Modric together made a lot of sense. But on the other hand, Valverde offers that relentless energy, a lot going forward, but at the same time, he offers so much going back. There's energy, there's pace, and his presence is felt all across the pitch. So that's where I personally feel, given what Kroos offers and what Valverde offers, I think he's going to go with Valverde.
So for you, it's Tchouaméni, Valverde and Modric, correct?
Yes, I think with the City team and the high-pressing game that they play, I think they will require that energy. But we'll compare them after we've also discussed City will set up. But yeah, I think in this game, they're going to need the legs of Valverde because it's going to be an extremely high-intensity game. And I don't think Toni Kroos can provide you that intensity against a team like City beyond 60 minutes.
Correct. It's also very surprising that he chose to play a Kroos-Modric against a very, you know, good midfield of Chelsea, at least on paper. You had Enzo, you had Kante, you had Kovacic, who are really good on the ball, right? And it's surprised that he played Kroos, which essentially shows how much he had like a bit of confidence on Chelsea, like really screwing this match up.
No, I mean, I totally agree with you on that part because yes, Chelsea were going through a rough patch. And yes, Graham Potter had been sacked, but there was still always that element of unpredictability, right? When you're playing, when a club starts under a new manager. And that's again, I think, why Madrid keep doing well in this competition. It's because they keep reading those moments correctly. And Ancelotti, again, read the moment correctly that his team will not be overrun in midfield. And he went with a slightly slower duo of Kroos and Modric and got it right and bossed the game around and dictated the pace of the game.
Right. Let's move on to defense then. For left back and right back, I think both of us would agree that it'll probably be Dani Carvajal on the right side and Camavinga as he's now playing in his new adopted role on the left side.
Yes, I think there's no doubt about it. Honestly, prior to recording this podcast, I had a bit of doubt whether he's going to play Nacho or he's going to play Carvajal. But the more we spoke prior to recording this episode, I think more and more I'm convinced that yes, he's going to go ahead with Carvajal. He also trusts Carvajal more. And on the left, Camavinga is a sure shot starter. And I think let's give praise to Camavinga because he came into this Madrid team last year almost as a prodigy who was expected to be the spine of that or the pivot in that midfield. But how well he has transitioned to the left back role when required this season, and he's pretty much made it his own position, right?
Correct. It just felt like he had to wait for a Kroos and Modric to maybe even retire so that he'll get his favored, you know, midfield position. But it just seems like he's happy to play left back wherever Real Madrid wants him to play. So that's good on the youngster side.
I think he is a player with an extremely high game IQ because it's not as if he's playing out of his position on the left hand side of the field. But he has pretty much owned up the position. He's not afraid to go up front. He's not afraid to come in when required. And again, even while sitting back, he does not seem to be, let's say, fazed by any of it. So, I mean, yeah, really, really, the way he has taken up this position is truly exceptional.
Coming, now, we move on to the centre-backs, where we have a little bit of a debate. We have Rudiger, the ex-Chelsea man, who probably is favoured a little bit by Ayusha. Then we have Eder Militao, a mainstay in their defence, and David Alaba, the left-legged defender, who probably has his own stake to claim for that position.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think you and I are in agreement that Militao will definitely start. Who do you think is going to start between Rudiger and Alaba?
I mean, if I want to be that traditional centre-back pairing kind of a guy, who I want to right-footed right-centre-back and left-footed left-centre-back, than David Alaba. But I do feel like, you know, when it comes to the presence of Haaland, right, when you really need a physical defender, I think Rudiger is best. And Rudiger also has a little bit of that element where he can, you know, mess with a striker. And Haaland is also known to do a lot of that. So I think maybe Haaland versus Rudiger is probably a way to go for this.
Honestly, I would pay any amount of money to see Rudiger and Haaland in a wrestling match. It would truly be something.
Yeah.
A sight to behold, them jostling each other, Haaland with his back to Rudiger, getting those knees in his calf, his shin, his ankles. And then Haaland trying to push around Rudiger. Probably love to see both a ball going over the Madrid defense and Rudiger and Haaland chasing it together. But I don't know why. I just have a sense he's going to trust Alaba more in this game. And the sole reason for this is I just feel Alaba has more composure than Rudiger. Mm-hmm. And that's me coming from a Chelsea fan who just loved the chaos which Rudiger brought to the Chelsea defense.
Right.
But I think he's going to go with Alaba, a player he's trusted, a player with whom Ancelotti's been there before. So just to cap up then, I think the front three we were in agreement with. It's just that you feel he's going to put Cruz out there over Valverde. And he's going to put out a Rudiger over an Alaba. And that those are the areas where we differ. But apart from the way that this lineup is structured, who do you think are the key players in this team? I mean, the obvious answers are Benzema and Vinicius Jr. So I don't think we need to cover or praise them at all. But who apart from these two, even let's say Luka Modric, I mean, we don't need to talk about Modric being crucial, but who apart from these three players do you think is going to, to play well? Because just these three playing well is not going to be enough against a team like City.
Exactly. So, I mean, just for the threat of Haaland, whoever becomes a centre-back pairing, I think will have to have a perfect game against Haaland. Of course, the other thing is to kind of, you know, put a little bit of confusion within the passing game that Man City set up, and hence Ilara Mendy and Valverde, if Valverde plays, or Cruz and Modric really need to be on the same wavelength to, you know, make sure that City's midfield is a little bit in disarray. What do you think, Ayusha? Who do you think is the crucial player for Real Madrid here?
I think the game, obviously, you and I are in agreement, is going to be decided in midfield. And for me, I think Tchouaméni is really going to be extremely crucial, because yes, he's now been playing regularly, but in the first part of the season, he did not seem very right. settled into the team.
Right.
And in this game, I don't think he has played a team like City, where there's going to be so much activity happening around him. There are going to be different players who are going to be running by him. It's not like every time it's just going to be Gundogan. Sometimes Bernardo's going to step in, because there's so much fluidity.
Yeah.
So amidst all of that chaos, and given if Cruz and Modric both start, or even if just one of them starts, still the bulk of the workload is going to be on him to block those passing lanes, as you mentioned, and then also move the ball quickly out to the Madrid front three or to Modric. So I think a lot is going to depend on him. And just to draw a parallel, I mean, it's similar to how crucial Partey was to Arsenal to break up City's game, and we saw how flustered he was, right?
Right.
He just could not come to terms with the fact that De Bruyne was running past him, was being so direct, and so much of the action was going right through him up to Haaland, and he just seemed he was just rattled by everything.
And we did predict in that episode that his performance has to be yes. top notch to break City down, which didn't happen.
So I think if Tchouaméni does not have the right kind of game, or let's say he has a Partey kind of game, then I think City will have a party at the Bernabeu.
So let's move on to Manchester City. So we are very familiar with how they really turn up in the Premier League. Is it going to be different for the Champions League this time?
Again, for City, one thing is obvious, he's not going to start Riyad Mahrez. I think for the Arsenal game, we had a bit of a disagreement. I went with the idea that he's going to play Bernardo because it's a big game. You were of the idea that because it's the Premier League, he's going to go ahead with Mahrez. But I think now we both can agree that if it's a big game, Pep likes to go with Bernardo and have more of that defensive cover also,
correct,
right?
Yeah.
If that is sorted out, there are two areas which I'm really interested to see what
he
does.
Wait, sir, does Haaland play? Or does he overthink this?
Maybe, you know, Pep being Pep, he pushes Haaland back into midfield and he decides
to control
Tchouaméni.
Yeah.
And Gundogan is going to be my forward.
Right.
And he tries to outthink.
But of course, jokes apart, Haaland will play. And if that doesn't happen, we'll have like, I think, a 1 hour episode next week analyzing what went wrong.
And we also chronicle every time Pep has overthought decisions. Settling with this debate on Bernardo starting over Riyad Mahrez, there are two other areas that we need to discuss. One is obviously going to be his defense. And I think, again, it's pretty much sure he's going to start Walker. But again, against Bayern in both the games, he did not play Kyle Walker. So do you think there's a chance that he benches Walker given the threat of Vinicius and goes ahead with an Akanji, or it's not happening? He's going to trust Walker in the big game like this.
From my experience of watching Man City and Man United games, it's always a Walker and a Rashford matchup he really looks forward to. So I think a Walker as against Vinicius, who is pacey, who is more than just pacey, of course.
Yeah.
But I think, in his opinion, maybe Walker is a good matchup for Vinicius rather than having a centre-back like Akanji playing on the right side.
Yeah, even I agree with you on this part. Again, it's pretty much my rational, apart from the fact that Walker is very good with one-to-one defending, and he probably is there among all the defenders that City have. I think he has the best defensive attributes also. So I definitely think he's going to be there. Plus, given the fact that Walker was there last year again in that Vinicius Jr. matchup. So yes, I think Kyle Walker definitely starts.
And then he'll have Bernardo Silva in front of him in case, you know, he kind of has to go forward and someone can track back. So that's perfect if you see a Walker and a Bernardo Silva combination.
Definitely. I mean, in total agreement with you on that. The last area in terms of a starting lineup I want to discuss with you is Grealish was starting every single game. I think it was a given. But now the wrinkle is that Phil Foden is fit again. Foden has been playing a couple of games because Pep has been rotating players. Foden started the last game. We all are aware of Foden's quality. Am I wrong in saying that you will also agree with me that Foden is just a more gifted and probably a better footballer than Grealish? Let's not go on form, simply in terms of attribute.
I think, yeah, Grealish probably is a little bit more one-dimensional. I mean, all due respect to him, just in
yes.
comparison
exactly,
to Foden.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Foden probably just brings in a little bit of surprise. He can, you know, move in to the center. Let's say Haaland, you know, holds up the ball, then Foden can move behind him and work the play up there. Grealish is a little bit more of a traditional winger, at least in how he's played under Pep Guardiola. Aston Villa, he was doing a lot of things. But here, it just seems like he's more of a left-sided winger.
Yeah.
And hence, maybe a Carvajal will find it easier against him, rather than a Phil Foden who can, you know, play center, play as a false nine even. So maybe, yeah, Pep has a couple of options to overthink with.
Exactly. So this, yeah, exactly my question was there. So yes, Grealish has been his choice. He rested Grealish in the past game. All signs point to Grealish towards starting. But if I have to put on the Pep overthinking hat, this is one area where he probably can overthink, right? And so should he go with Foden now in this game? Or it should still be Grealish, given the fact that he's gone with Grealish all along with the season? And Grealish, whether he scores goals or is bringing a lot of attacking output or not, he is definitely working. He's very good. He's now settled into the City press. He is also tracking back a lot, making some. He tracked back at a couple of crucial moments in the Arsenal game. So Grealish has become a very well settled part of the system. But on the other hand, we have the Phil Foden quality, a generational talent. Should he stay with Grealish or should he roll the dice with this one and go with the quality of Foden?
I think you've pretty much answered the question there. I think he has to stay with Grealish and not overthink this one. Foden also has a couple of games where he's completely off and invisible. This might happen considering that he's not played a lot of the season. So hence, Grealish over Foden, in my opinion.
I mean, shout out to Jack Grealish. I think 2 years back, he was at Aston Villa. And given how even last season was going, I think none of us would have predicted that he would be starting ahead Phil Foden and be entrusted in a semi-final against Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. I mean, it's truly something, it's truly special, isn't it?
I believed in Jack Grealish, you did not.
I still don't believe he is worth starting in a lineup like this. Forget,
right.
Yeah, not worth £100 million. But yeah, credit where due, I think he's definitely come leaps and bounds ahead as opposed to last season. I think having the starting lineup laid down, the next question is, how do you think City are, what's going to be City's shape? Because he threw a curve. Pep did some overthinking against Arsenal, right? And he didn't go with his 4-2-3-1 or traditional 4-3-3. He went ahead with a 4-4-1-1 where Kevin De Bruyne was playing extremely close to Erling Haaland, almost as that designated second striker, or the person who was just asked to plug in the hole every time Haaland dropped a bit deep. How do you think Pep lines up?
Correct. I think in that game, the attitude was we need a draw because Arsenal was supposed to throw the kitchen sink at that game. Maybe Real Madrid are a little bit more sensible. So 4-4-1-1 is somewhat less likely. But I wouldn't put it past Pep to kind of, you know, think that that's somewhere he needs to go.
So you're saying then, what does it become? Does it become a 4-2-3-1 where he does it, goes at the double pivot, or it becomes a 4-3-3 where De Bruyne is asked to play to the right of Haaland. How do you think it will shape up?
I think he'll have to be a little conservative considering it's Bernabeu, so he'll probably go 4-2-3-1. In this case, you will have Gundogan and Rodri, but of course Gundogan will have a lot of freedom to go up front, and then De Bruyne will play behind Haaland alongside your Bernardo Silva and Grealish.
I mean, I kind of agree with you on the fact that he probably will not do a 4-4-1-1 in this case. I just feel he will probably do a 4-3-3, but obviously that shape will be fluid. It might turn into a 4-2-3-1 sometimes, might be a 4-3-3, but yes, I think, as you're saying, Gundogan will have a lot of freedom. I feel he's going to keep giving De Bruyne a lot of freedom. We have seen that happen over the past 4-5 games where he's given De Bruyne that freedom to draw, to go on the right, to whip the ball in, to run down the byline on both the sides. Basically, it becomes a team of 9 players in very regimented positions, and De Bruyne getting the freedom to play as that wizard. It's almost kind of like the freedom that Modric has in a Madrid midfield. I think he's going to give KDB that, and I think it is crucial also because yes, City are a great team, but if there's one player who can whip out a moment of magic from anywhere, I think it's him, and that is going to be crucial. And secondly, having that freedom for Kevin is also important because of the link he enjoys with Haaland.
So apart from the obvious very key players that we have with Haaland, who else do you think will be very crucial in the role that they play at the Bernabeu?
I think there are two players which really come to my mind. One, you might call it bias, but I think Jack Grealish. And the second for me, and might be a surprising answer, is John Stones. Now, I'll tell you why Grealish. I have no doubt that Grealish his work rate is going to be very high. He's going to run up and down the pitch a lot. But the main question for me with Grealish, as you mentioned, he's pretty much a one-dimensional winger. And I don't know if that is enough to pose enough of an attacking threat to Madrid. And given the season team that Real Madrid are, if they are able to cope with Kevin De Bruyne, or let's say De Bruyne has a bad game, then I think a lot of focus falls on Grealish contributing going up front. And it's not going to be so easy for him that Haaland stops the ball and then plays the ball space straight to him. I think there'll be players to cut that pass out. We have talked about Valverde having extremely high work rate. How much Grealish is going to contribute attacking-wise in this game is something I have real doubts about. And that's why I'm saying that Grealish needs to have a very, very good game. And he's not known for being the most decisive player going forward. So that's why him. And secondly, I'm saying John Stones because it's simply about dealing with Benzema. And I think while dealing with Benzema and also keeping an eye out for the runs of Rodrigo, I think Stones has to be extremely, extremely alert. Because Diaz more often than not is solid, but Stones in this game, I don't know how much, considering that he likes to go up front, how quickly he drops back and covers these players is going to be extremely crucial. That's why I think Stones also needs to have a very, very good game.
I think more than key players, you just point out two players who have to be at their, you know, top abilities, at least for this game, and not screw up any point. Yeah, so fair. I do agree with what you're saying about Grealish, especially because Grealish, being a one, I wouldn't say one dimension, just the way it fits into Pep's system, maybe, as against a Carvajal, who is also a traditional right back. So Carvajal, I've seen him suffer more against maybe like a Xavi, right, who kind of, you know, moves around a lot and interchanges with a lot of players. Grealish wouldn't be doing that in a City left wing. So maybe Carvajal might have it easy with Grealish. And you're right about Stones. And this is very typical of English defenders, right? They just have these games. Maybe it's my bias of knowing Maguire too closely, but there are times when they might screw up. So that's true.
Especially if I'm Benzema, I won't necessarily be scared of a central defensive pairing of Stones and Ruben Diaz, right? I would be more worried that, okay, City as a system will not allow me a lot of opportunities.
Correct.
But if I'm against the two of them, I will back myself up, right?
Exactly. And another player that I think is probably crucial for Man City is Gundogan. If Tchouaméni is being preoccupied by maybe a Rodri in midfield, then there are chances that Gundogan does a lot of these Lampard-like runs into the penalty box. Right?
As he did against Fulham and scored two.
Exactly.
Goals.
So I think
Leeds.
I think if that happens, maybe Tchouaméni has to track back, and maybe a Kroos or a Modric are unlikely to kind of go along with Gundogan. So maybe Gundogan can sneak in a couple of goals. But having said that, he did that so recently that maybe Madrid are aware and will prepare a plan for him.
So now that we have discussed how both of these teams will line up, the key question which keeps coming to my mind is, how do you think Real Madrid will approach this game at a very high level? Irrespective of how they line up defensively, whether it's Rudiger or whether it's Alaba, I think the main difference is going to be in midfield. Whether they start with Toni Kroos and Modric together, or they only play Modric for this game. So, how do you think Madrid are going to set up for this game? Whether they're going to be upfront, like they're going to try to grab the game by the scruff of its neck like they did against Chelsea? Or are they going to sit back? How will it work in your paradigm where you are saying that both Kroos and Modric will play together?
So for me, if Real Madrid set up like, you know, really going neck and neck with Man City, I think that will not really work out. As a United fan, I've seen United try to do that and get absolutely thumped, even with the quality of players that Real Madrid have. What would probably serve them well is to let maybe Man City have a lot of the ball and put up a low block and then counter-attack with the best winger in the world right now, probably Vinicius Jr., and then have Benzema kind of supplement him in the penalty box. So I think that would work out the best for Real Madrid. Why I'm preferring maybe a Kroos in midfield is so that he can ping those passes into a Vinicius Jr. or even maybe a Rodrigo up front, and then they can have that freedom at counter-attacking play.
I agree with you entirely. At least how Madrid should approach this game is to sit back and absorb the City pressure and then try to quickly transition the ball out to a Vinicius or a Rodrigo. I'm totally on board with that. But don't you think, considering with this strategy, playing with both Kroos and Modric together can be a bit troublesome for them, because both together are not known for running a lot, and then City will be able to completely run past them and move the ball around very easily?
I think as long as it's a low block, there are just fewer spaces for maybe a Man City player to run in behind a Kroos and Modric. But of course, that's, as I famously say, remains to be seen.
Now, you don't seem so sure about Toni Kroos anymore, do you?
That part is there. It's just, for me, when I see United play with a Toni Kroos-like guy, for me, which is Casemiro, pinging the passes during a counter-attacking play, really works out well for us. And Kroos is arguably better than Casemiro at those long passes, and just having set up that system where he can find these, you know, better players in the team. Hence, I feel Kroos is a better bet than Valverde. But I understand Valverde is someone like a Jisung Park. You just need someone like that in the game to kind of...
I can't believe you've elevated Jisung Park to the level of Valverde.
It's always United references for me, and he's the closest they have.
I think Valverde is City's equivalent of a Bernardo in terms of the space he occupies on the pitch.
Agree.
But in terms of talent, definitely Bernardo Silva, I think, is miles ahead of his talent on the ball. So, given now, and the reason we're not discussing how City are going to approach this game, I think, is pretty straightforward. They are going to try to boss the game right from minute one, and whenever they lose the ball, they are going to press continuously as a team. On to the key areas or the key battles where we think this game will be decided. According to me, I think there are broadly three areas where this match might get decided. One is going to be that battle between Vinicius Jr. and Kyle Walker. We saw a version of it last year in the semi-final, and I think we're going to see it again this year. One obviously is coping with the Haaland threat that comes written. And one, I think, is that battle in midfield. So what do you want to discuss first? Let's talk about Vinicius versus Walker.
Yep. What happened last time? I mean, I've seen with Walker, he has a couple of off games, but he's generally very, very good with pacey wingers. Having said that, Vinicius Jr. is much more than just a pacey winger. He's really smart in the way he makes his movements. Not like a Rashford, who's, I think, in my opinion, very one-dimensional in what he does.
And especially when last year Vinicius had Kyle Walker in his pocket. I don't know if you remember, but during the game at the Etihad, he did that dummy where near the halfway line where the ball went through Walker's legs, and then Vinicius had a free run into goal. I think after that, Walker would truly be
super
aware of this. And I think this is going to be a crucial area, because we've seen time and time again, Vinicius, although Trent is not great defensively, but when he came up against Trent also, we saw he had Trent in his pocket. Whenever he comes up again, right back this year, in spite of, again, whatever the way Lampard set up, we saw how tough a time he gave Reece James. And Walker, for all his experience and the way he kept Kylian Mbappe quiet at the World Cup, I think Vinicius is a different game altogether. And he relishes these battles also as a player.
Exactly. It's one-on-one situations Vinicius Jr. will probably do very well. Except maybe against Wan-Bissaka, if that ever happens. So let's see. But you're right. I mean, Vinicius Jr.
For that, Manchester United have to earn the right to play Real Madrid.
Yes. I think we have a couple of friendlies coming up against them. But anyways. Yeah, I think that's one matchup to look forward to.
I think the next main area is Erling Haaland. And I'm not going to focus so much about Haaland getting in behind the Madrid defense. We all are aware of that. The Madrid defense is aware of that. There are two things which have recently become very prominent in Erling Haaland's game. One is obviously the connection now he's seeming to have with De Bruyne, with Jack Grealish, or even with Gundogan, where basically Haaland is now playing a lot more in a capacity where he's holding up the ball and then releasing the ball to the players who are running in behind him. And this was something we did not see for the first, let's say, 75% of his season. And this is becoming more and more prominent. And this is an area where Real Madrid now really have to be really, really careful. Because it's not that only one player also runs past Haaland. When he's holding up the ball, City usually have two or three players running in behind. And then suddenly your defense can become, overburdened with City players. And again, that also becomes tough if you have a central defender or two central defenders who have gone up to get the ball of Haaland. So I think breaking up that link of play is going to be extremely crucial.
In terms of hold up play, I agree. Haaland is very good, especially because he's such a strong guy for a 21, 22 year old, right? He's pretty good as a number nine. Although we have observed a few instances where Haaland has his first touch is actually pretty weak. It reminds me of Lukaku when he was at United. And so if that is something maybe a Real Madrid has seen, and if they have a defender capable of maybe overpowering Haaland, in my eyes, that would probably be Rudiger and not David Alaba. So that's something that they can do. They can kind of, you know, nick the ball off him whenever he kind of tries to hold the ball. But having said that, I just feel Haaland has so many different ways he can play. He can, okay, if he's not able to hold the ball up, then just probably De Bruyne is just pinging them, you know, as through balls and is getting in behind. So he's pacey and strong, which is a very difficult problem to deal with.
Would it be a crazy idea if Haaland is dropping deep, Madrid just allow him to receive the ball and not commit players to him? Because we really haven't... I think Haaland has scored only one goal this season from outside the box. So let's say he's outside that box and he's receiving the ball. You do not ask your central defenders to go up there and block him. Maybe if a midfielder is close to him, they try to narrow the space down. But your defenders just sit back and keep an eye on the City players who are running in behind. Is that a crazy idea?
I think in that case, I mean, it kind of... Maybe it is a little bit crazy because you expect the midfielders are expected to track back with the City, midfielders who are probably who are overloading the penalty box. So in this way, because if the defenders don't come in, then Haaland has a free hand. I know it's probably not known for his long range shooting, but it is probably something that Real Madrid won't do.
And our final area, obviously, in a big game like this, invariably turns out to be the midfield. And in midfield, game after game, we keep coming back to Kevin De Bruyne. Right, Arsenal had no answer for Kevin De Bruyne, not only in terms of the goals he scored, but also in terms of the freedom he enjoyed. So considering KDB will most likely have the same kind of freedom in this game, what do you think will be Ancelotti's approach in this game? Is he going to ask somebody to, let's say, man-mark De Bruyne? Or how do you think he's going to try to deal with the KDB problem?
In my opinion, he's never really man-marked anyone. Real Madrid don't do that. It's a very sad and weird tactic that people like United use. So I don't think he'll man-mark De Bruyne, but...
Actually, I also want to point out, I don't think I'm wrong in saying that we're still awaiting De Bruyne to light up, an arena like the Champions League semi-final, right? We have never seen him go up against a Madrid or a Barcelona and truly light up the game, something which we are very well aware that he can do.
Yeah, you can't go as far as to say De Bruyne doesn't turn up in big games.
He definitely does. Especially in the Premier League, he does.
Exactly. You're right. But Real Madrid, Barca, Champions League, semi-finals, quarter-finals, when really City needed him, he has become a little bit suspect.
I really hope he has a great game, because personally, I feel he's at the level of a Luka Modric. There is no difference between them. But for some reason, especially in Spanish circles or in Spain, he's probably not treated with the same kind of respect. And I think a big performance on this stage is going to be brilliant. And again, obviously, at a broader level, marketing-wise, this game is so much about Haaland versus Benzema, who's the more lethal striker up front. So a lot to look forward to. To finally end this discussion, Himanshu, predictions. If you remember, when we were breaking down the Champions League quarterfinals, we both had predicted that these two teams would go through. But at that stage, I had predicted that Manchester City will be the team going through to the finals, and you had predicted that Real Madrid would go through.
A lot of bias, I think, I have to personally put aside for this. and then say maybe Man City will be better in for over both the legs. Maybe at what actually really surprised me is how they overcame Bayern Munich, right? I didn't expect that to happen with that much of ease. So I just feel maybe Man City have a bit of an upper hand, especially because Real Madrid have not shown consistency through all the tournaments they're being a part of, as against Man City, who have been excellent in all competitions. So maybe I'm a little bit inching towards Man City if I remove my bias, but I'd love for Real Madrid to do something really well. And Bernabeu is the best chance they've got to kind of get a couple of goals lead and then hope that Pep overthinks in the second leg.
So obviously, it's clear from your words, the City, you now feel that City are the favourites to go through. But first leg, again, what do you think? Is it going to be a City victory? Are we looking at a draw? How do you see this?
This is so difficult to predict. Putting my bias, I'll say Real Madrid 2 goals. But then putting my brain, I don't see how they'll probably even win this one. A draw at best for Real Madrid or Man City nicking it by a goal.
Yeah, you know my prediction. I think this is Manchester City's year. I know every year we keep saying this, they have a chance at the treble. But I do feel it's City's year. And again, the fact that every game in the Premier League for them is a knockout game, I feel they just have lesser time to dwell on the consequence of each of these games or what is at stake, or you know, to buy into the hype. So for all of those reasons, I just think they're perfectly poised to beat Real Madrid. And I think with Haaland being there now, there's a certain element of directness which has come into Pep's games, and I think an element of directness is what you need to win a cup competition like the Champions League. So I think Manchester City will be going through. I also feel that they will get the victory at the Bernabeu. I think they're going to win this game 2-1. The only way I personally see City losing this game is if they make some big defensive blunder, which includes their entire team being in the opponent half and then a long ball getting played over. But if they truly stick to Pep's plan, I don't see Real Madrid beating them.
There you have it. That was our 10th episode in the bag. Our 10th episode on possibly the biggest game of the season. Thank you for taking out the time for listening to us. Please like, share and subscribe up to our podcast on your platforms. Please keep spreading the word, because you spreading the word is the only way we can grow. And again, as I mentioned last time, please engage with us, follow us on Instagram. Himanshu is continuing to post some beautifully crafted reels, snippets from our episodes, as well as some foreshadowing on what we'll discuss in the coming weeks. We'll be back with our 11th episode on Friday, where we'll break down these two massive games and also look forward to the weekend which lies ahead in the Premier League. Until then, see you.